You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Welcome, dear kinswomen and kinsmen. Thanks for all that you do for the kingdom. Thanks for your faithfulness. Thanks for your help. Thanks for showing love for each other. And thank you for caring about each other. It's extremely important, especially in a world that hates us. It's just absolutely insane, this world. I mean, I can't even conceive how insane this world really is. The more I look into it, the crazier it is. And one fellow says, oh, it's not the world that's crazy, it's the people in it. Well, that's what I mean. They're part of the world. Yeah, it's insane. So, we're in the book Fritz Springmeier, Be Wise as Serpents. Amazing the things we are finding out about these so-called Christian churches that we always thought were Christian churches. It's scary to think that there has been this level of Masonic infiltration. I don't understand why somebody would live for the purpose of doing harm. Now, you know that the Jew is programmed to live that way, and the Negro. Not all of them, but most of them. But as far as, you know, just people in our own race, I just can't believe that they would be involved in such a thing. It's astounding. It's inexplicable. I always say this, and I don't understand why anyone would want to follow the all-time loser. Why would you want to be on the all-time loser's team? It's a good question, isn't it? Well, let's delve right in. Masons have oh, by the way, we're on page 353. If you're opening Be Wise as Serpents. It's quite a resource here. This fellow did a lot of research. And, a team of men couldn't do this much research, it seems like, so I don't know. Who knows what to think? So, Masons have played prominent roles in the Presbyterian Church. This section must be prefaced by saying that the United Presbyterian Church is very close to Freemasonry. Can you imagine? There are more United Presbyterians than all the other seven major Presbyterian denominations put together. There is an excess of 2 million American United Presbyterians in how many churches? 9,000 churches. In contrast, the Orthodox Presbyterian Church had only 16,590 members in the 1982 yearbook of American and Canadian churches, and the Presbyterian Church of North America was listed having but 4,878. The small Reformed Church finally took an official stand against Freemasonry in 1942. The one Presbyterian denomination prior to that time took a clear stand against Freemasonry and was the associate Presbyterian Church with the following 1757 secession tradition had forbidden Masonic membership. Fritz is writing some weird sentences here. In writing this part concerning the Presbyterians, I have taken the liberty to lump the various groups together in the same section. However, they can in no way be lumped together in their response to Freemasonry and the one world power. Jewry. When you say Freemasonry, you say Jewry. When you say the one world power, you say Jewry. Oh, no, they don't practice their religion anymore. That wonderful religion you know as Judaism, that holy religion, you know, the one that Christianity spawned out of.
Yeah, that holy religion, Judaism. Yeah, they're not practices of that anymore.
That's why I told you that Rothschild sets a table for the devil. And this is Talmudic. To set a table for, you know, like when, for instance, you know, when they tell your children, oh, put a nice plate of cookies and milk out for Santa Claus. Get it? That's exactly the same thing. That's very Talmudic. They do that. It's called offerings to demons. What do you think about that? Is your head spinning right now? I mean, it is just absolutely crazy. Crazy. Examples of Presbyterian Masons working on the functional church level are Robert W. Cretney, 33 degree Deacon Presbyterian Church, Morton P. Steyer, Knights Templar, 32 degree Shriner, York Rite College, Royal Order of Scotland, and Elder Presbyterian Church, and Hugh I. Evans, 33 degree Knights Templar, National Head of the Presbyterian Church. National Head is a 33rd degree Knights Templar. 33rd degree Mason Hugh L. Evans, 1887 to 1958, deserves some note here. He represented the U.S. at the meeting of World Council of Churches in Holland in 1948. He was the national head of the Presbyterian Church, USA, in 1950 and 51. In 55, he became director of the foundation of the Presbyterian Church at New York City. He served for a while as the president of the Board of National Missions. The newsletter Frees the Masons, August 1990, says, quote, on the other end of that, however, is the church on whose board sit lodge members, or whose deacons and elders share Masonic secrets. These secrets reflect their higher allegiance to the lodge. Ladies and gentlemen, I must stop there. You know why, right? And it says 9/11 during the message as I'm stopping. You know why? Who does that? Who has dual loyalties? Yes, the Jew. Did you hear what it just said here? That on these church boards sit lodge members, and deacons and elders share Masonic secrets. Now listen, these secrets reflect their higher allegiance to the lodge and seem to produce an aloofness from the rest of the church body. These are good men who attend regularly and are often the financial backbone of many small congregations. You dig? See, dual loyalty, the Jew is teaching that to the Mason, right? So they're in the church and they're loyal to the Masonic lodge, but they're not loyal to Jesus Christ. They're just pretending. Sort of like we were talking about yesterday on Rabbit Hole Radio Show, a quote unquote Christian socialist. No such thing. This is absolutely disgusting. Really, it is. One pastor who wrote his frustration in a rural church, he put it this way, quote, as faithful as these men are, I always feel at board meetings that there is a second agenda which is not open to me. Geez, you think so? It's like they get their marching orders from the lodge on how to conduct the business of the church. They are good men, but they seem to operate with some higher knowledge than the rest of us. There is no submission to the authority of the church and its members. Sometimes Masonic literature shows its true colors almost to the point of being embarrassing. The book Standard Freemasonry states that Presbyterians are bad material for the lodge until they go against their church. Isn't that interesting? So that is obviously the goal of these Masons, to get them to go against the church. Meaning, you see, this is why it's just clear as a bell, right? You see how I try to encourage our people to forget about men and institutions and have a relationship with the Father and keep your eyes on Him? You see, what it says here is that these Presbyterians are bad material for the lodge until they go against their church, their organization. See, most people, like most Catholics, they are loyal to the Catholic Church, not Jesus Christ. You see? And that's where we as men and women go wrong. The only way to keep it right is to not have any loyalty, I mean, you know, to organizations and so on. I mean, you know what? If you go to a church, yeah, you want to help out the church. I understand that. But the first priority, we as men in Christianity have a list of priorities, and we don't put institutions above our Father. That's my point. We don't worship institutions. And if we do, we're messed up. If we do, we always get the short end of the stick. So it says, it continues, the Proceedings of the Grand Lodge of Oregon, 1870, page 209, states that the world is a good place when the Presbyterian Church shares its pulpit with a Jewish rabbi in Salem, Oregon. I mean, that says it all. Listen to that again. This book from the Grand Lodge states that the world is a good place. Now, we know the world's a good place, don't we? Sure we do. Sure we do. But the world is especially a good place when the Presbyterian Church shares its pulpit with a Jewish rabbi, you see? The Alabama Grand Lodge reported in 1889 that out of its 7,950 Freemasons in the state, 483 were Christian ministers. Let me let that sink in as I take a sip of my iced coffee. Freemasons are Christian ministers? What do you think might be the purpose of that? Remember what Alice Bailey, what it said, what they were going to do to make the one world religion? It was going to be done through Freemasonry, education, and the church. Unbelievable. The New York Grand Lodge report of 1890 gives us, I'm looking at the number, that's why I'm laughing, gives us the breakdown of the 703 Christian clergymen that were New York Masonic members. Methodists, 288 of them were Masons. Episcopalian, 146. Baptist, 112. Presbyterian, 59. Universalist, 31. Congregationalist, 21. Dutch Reformed, 13. Christian, 13. Lutheran, 11. Jewish, 7. Unitarian, we know that that's an evil church, remember? And Reformed Jew, one in each of those. What a world we're living in, folks. What a world. The New Age in the Presbyterian churches. The United Presbyterian Church put out a report on occult and psychic activities in 1976 that gave a positive report to various occult activities. It encourages the study of the occult within the churches, quote unquote, on page 3. The medium Olga Worrell's book, The Gift of Healing, gets a favorable review. One of the seven on the task force that wrote up the report was Mrs. Marguerite Harmon Breaux, who was a medium and a co-founder of SFF. Can you imagine, ladies and gentlemen? See, we as Anglo-Saxon people are gullible, and we like to believe the best about people. We like to give them a chance to screw us, and they do, etc., etc. We are not interested in finding out about what's really going on, a lot of us, and therefore, my people perish for the lack of knowledge. My people get duped for the lack of knowledge. My people get broadsided by the lack of knowledge. My people get tricked by the lack of knowledge. My people get robbed by the lack of knowledge. And I could go on about that, right? Another example of the New Age in the Presbyterian Church is Pastor H. Richard Neff of the Christian Community Presbyterian Church of Bowie, Maryland. He authored the book Psychic Phenomena and Religion. He states in his book, quote, "Occult practices may be beneficial and helpful for many people," on page 166. That was a quote. Can you imagine going to a church and your pastor writes a book called Psychic Phenomena and Religion? How long do you think I would be attending that church? I'll tell you how long. First, I'd go talk to the pastor and I'd rebuke him. Then I would not go to the church any longer. I've been kicked out of churches before. One church I was going to had this cross on it with a circle, and it was known as the Cross of Baal, and boy, did the pastor get upset when I revealed it to him. Now, some people will say, oh, that's a halo on the cross. Or yeah, well, it's very interesting that, you know, like I spoke about that dear lady that just got kicked out of the church. Our people are, when we go to tell the truth to these people, they just shut it down. They can't stand it. I remember one fellow telling me that he was trying to speak to his former pastor about stuff, and the pastor was shutting the lights off when he was trying to talk to him and saying, okay, yeah, okay, gotta go now. Yeah. You see what I mean? Shutting the lights off. I don't want to see the light. I don't want to know. You see, that's the message. Continuing. The primitive Methodists. Some men who have joined the Masonic Lodge are difficult to understand. Lorenzo Dow is one of these. Lorenzo Dow was solidly behind the Masonic belief system. He joined the Freemasons in 1824. Some of the things he wrote sound like universalism, but he wasn't really theologically an universalist. Most of the people he preached to didn't understand where he was coming from either. Lorenzo Dow was the catalyst that caused Hugh Bourne and a friend, William Cloves, to establish the Primitive Methodists in 1811. Do you see that that has 666 in it? And, of course, the 11 for the devil's children. But it also has 1 and 8 is 9 and 11 for the devil and the children. Isn't that interesting? No, Dave, I hate that when you do those number things. That drives me crazy. Yeah. Several denominations experience primitive movements. For instance, the Primitive Baptists. The idea of primitivism goes back to Rousseau, that means red, and Diderot's writings. Both were Masons. There are parallels in Freud's civilization and its discontent and Spengler's man and techniques. Nature is the norm. The world goes in cycles. Yes, it does. And we are returning. That is recycling back into another, oh boy, golden age. You know what that means? The Mason Thomas Paine encouraged this type of thinking. We have it in our power to begin the world over again. Do we? Indeed, Billington, in his scholarly work, Fire in the Minds of Men, shows how the word revolution was coined by the occultic secret societies because they believed that an upheaval would precede a revolving back to the conditions of an ancient golden age. Lorenzo Dow was sincere in bringing people to Christ, albeit his understanding of Christ, which many considered heresy. He traveled almost nonstop for his lifetime and likely preached to more people in his life than anyone else at that time. He was called crazy by many. Some called him a mystic. He was very keen on prophecy and preached it a lot. He preached often to the paradise on paradise and hell. During his nonstop traveling, Lorenzo Dow was a constant visitor to the Masonic lodges, to their chapters and their commanderies. Yet his memoirs mention nothing about such an important part of his life. There is not the slightest hint of involvement with the Masons, and in his memoirs, there is but an offhand remark on page 122 about a lodge meeting going on above him in a tavern he was staying at while he was trying to sleep. Why is he silent about his involvement? That's self-explanatory, Mr. Fritz. The primitive Methodist church that was set up had 12 permanent members who ruled. Later, 1846, 24 guardian representatives were selected and legally invested with the primitive Methodist church property. It wasn't until the next century that the democratic procedures began. Yes, that's always the progression, yeah. No doubt about it. What was the primitive Methodist church like when Russell's co-pastors found them? Apparently, the Masonic influence was strong. John Whitaker, a primitive Methodist minister, exposes the Masonic influence when he describes his denomination. The desire for latitudinarianism, that's the first time I've ever seen that word, has wrought untold mischief in our world, in our church. Theosophy, Swedenborgianism, Unitarianism, and even agnosticism are rampant today within our borders. It's time that the church was purged. In England, Charles Taze Russell's preachers found the primitive Methodists and Free Methodists very friendly. Brother J.B. Adamson, in a letter reprinted in the Watchtower in 1881, states, found the Free Methodists very fair, the treatment better than I got anywhere else. Gave the pamphlet to 16 preachers and 100 of the most intelligent of the church membership. It's possible some of the primitive Methodists heard of the Watchtower movement in the Masonic Hall or at some Masonic function. The 1991 yearbook for Jehovah's Witnesses records an early Bible student preaching to the Masons in their Masonic Hall. What did he preach on? He showed them the pyramid diagrams in front of Russell's Volume 1. Interestingly, the Masons used Piazzi Smythe's diagrams also in their literature, such as Manly P. Hall's The Secret Teaching of All Ages. They must have felt comfortable with Russell's pyramidology. At any rate, there is the possibility some primitive Methodists might have learned about the Bible students through lodge functions. In England, many primitive Methodists joined Russell's movement. 6 primitive Methodist ministers joined his organization en masse. In The Watchtower, February 1884, page 2, the problem is mentioned that Russell's followers were being mistaken for Universalists, primitive Methodists, or Adventists. New readers in all parts of the country are constantly inquiring, by what names do you call yourselves? Are you primitive Baptists? Are you missionary Baptists? Are you universalists? Are you Adventists? Are you primitive Methodists? Yes, this is one of the most important things, ladies and gentlemen. When I would speak to my neighbors back in Boston, they'd say, well, you must belong to some kind of a group. What group do you belong to? I said, well, I really don't belong to any groups, like, because it's my same thing. I keep my eyes on the Father. But it was important for them that I belonged to a group so that they could, you know, pin me down. You get it? So, as this book is documenting the Universalists, the Primitive Methodists, and the Second Adventists, all have strong Masonic connections. As this book has made it clearer what the early Watchtower Society was like in contrast to today, and how much closer it was to Masonic thinking in its early years, it is not such a surprise. Indeed, it is understandable how the Watchtower Society could be mistaken for being Universalists or Primitive Methodists. The not-so-primitive Methodists. The book Prominent Personalities in American Methodism by Howell gives an authoritative listing of the various lodge affiliations of prominent Methodist leaders. According to our compilation from this book, bearing imprint of 1945, 29 out of the 36 active bishops are members of secret orders of one sort or another. Let me just stop right there. This is disgusting. Members of secret orders, and they're saying that they're Christian. I don't know how men can shut off their minds and sear their consciences to be able to do such things. Yeah, we all have a problem with this or that, but that's a big problem. How do you sleep at night? How do you shut your mind off and say, oh, no, it's okay if I belong to the devil's church and the church of the Father in heaven? Oh, yes, sure it is. I'm sure the Father understands, doesn't he? So, it says here, the best qualification for becoming a bishop today is that one be at least a 32nd degree Mason. In other words, knowing that you're worshiping Lucifer, that the light that you've been asking for and the worshipful master, you know by the 30th degree that it is Lucifer, the light bearer. Can you even begin to imagine how crazy this world is? I'm sure there are people, when I tell them that all the religions of the world have the devil as their God. And I'm sure that there's some people that shake their heads, but now that you know what you're knowing here, right? These people are all, I mean, look at the Catholic Church. They're lopped up with Freemasonry. Look at the Baptists. Look at all these different ones. They're all lopped up with Freemasonry, the devil's church. It's the imitation church. The devil is the great imitator. Just like his children. Unbelievable, it really is. Perhaps better than showing lists of Methodist bishops who are Masons is just to get to the bottom line. The United Methodist Church wants a one-world government under the Jew world order. Get that now? The Methodist Church, United Methodist Church, wants a one-world government under the Jew world order. And we know that that's the same for the Jehovah's Witnesses. Remember, they're going to help kill the Christians and help this Jew world order to come into fruition, if it's possible. The United Methodist Church Rocky Mountain Conference wrote President Reagan in 1983, "Resolve that to ensure world peace and disarmament among nations, we United Methodists of the Rocky Mountain Conference urge the President and the Congress of the United States, in concert with all other willing nations, to call a World Constitutional Convention to reform the United Nations into a federal representative world government." Now, these are supposed to be the Father's people, Right?
You know, I want to talk to you a little bit about this, these Masonic lodges, because I did a study, and I mentioned this before, but I think I'll mention it again. To be a Shriner, you have to be a high-level Mason, just like you have to be, like they said here, to be a bishop, you need to be a 32nd degree Mason. Same deal. Now, these Shriners, they get involved in what looks to be like a harmless, you know, we help the children with a burn center thing and all this stuff. So what they do to raise money is they have event after event, dinner after dinner, barbecue after barbecue. And these people are just getting fatter and fatter and fatter and fatter. And they're dying like flies. It's a literal killing factory for the white man. I kid you not. You go look on Google and Google up Shriners Lodges. They have all different names and they're all Middle Eastern orders, yet they're white men in them. Get a load of some of the faces you see in there and get a load of how fat every one of them are. What's happening is it's a deliberate fattening up for the kill. So while you're serving the devil and helping the devil against the Father in heaven, you're being fattened up until you die an early death in most cases. I'm telling you, it is amazing. And of course, it's the same thing in the Masons. They have so many of these dinners and so on and so forth that they get fattened up and they die. It's like feeding rats poison. And they are rats. But you see, by making them, fattening them up for the kill, they ensure that their soul will enter into hell instead of into the Father's kingdom. I'm just leaving space for you to think about what I'm saying. You think about that. Because that's what the way I saw it to be. And I mean, I've saw how many events it's just one event after another event after another. Now, I'm sure this is all nice because you have a lot of social activity, right? But in the meantime, you don't realize, you know, it's the old frog in the frying pan, you know, or in the pot, you know. In other words, you're not realizing what's happening to you. All of America is being fattened up for the kill. But these people are especially, I mean, it's incredible. Go see and tell me what you find. I wanted to speak about something else too, that really is one of the most scary things I've ever seen in my entire life. Now, I'm not fearful about demons or something, but it literally is quite animalistic. You all have most likely heard of the preacher Kenneth Copeland. I suggest that you go to his YouTube channel and be careful, of course. But I've viewed maybe 13 minutes of one of his teachings. And the demonic possession is evident. We're talking about a growling, snarling beast. You just have to get a load of this. I don't know what it is about this creature, but it's very animalistic. The eyes are almost non-existent, and yet they look like some other being's eyes inside of the sockets of this so-called man. And all the while he's saying, thank you, Father, and all the, you know, and you, if you just were listening to the words and weren't paying attention to the body language and all the different things going on, you might be tricked, like those people that go to those churches.
You have got to get a load of this, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you, write me and tell me what you think. Do you think, are you seeing the same thing I'm seeing? Now, maybe different videos, it wouldn't be. The one that I was, what I'll do is I'll put the link to the video I watched, the first 13 or 14 minutes of, and I will put it in the description of this video. So please look for that. Please watch at least the first 14 minutes. And please tell me what you think. Am I seeing this correctly? Wow, is all I can say. I mean, wow. And wow is 666. Did you know that? W, 2 times 3 is 6. O is the 15th letter. 1 and 5 is 6. The sister, when she first watched it, she said, I could only take 2 minutes of watching this. She said he was channeling, and it looked like he was trying to shake something off of his shoulder. And then I asked her, I said, well, please at least just watch it at this time and this time. And she did, and my goodness. I don't think I've ever seen anything this animalistic. I mean, you speak about brute beasts or a wolf in sheep's clothing. That's why I called him a wolf. It's very scary. The facial faces he makes and everything. I mean, I can't believe there's people that would sit in that church and be put through something like that. It's the most crazy thing I've ever seen. Now, I'm not trying to tell you that he's like a lunatic that belongs in an asylum or something. I'm saying he's completely possessed. So, let's continue. Mason's like 33-degree Mason James C. Baker. Now, that's usually a Jew name again. Who is president of the Methodist Bishops and Vern Dale Johnson, there's another Jew name, chairman of the Evangelism for the United Methodist Church, have been directing affairs on the national level. Men like 33-degree Mason William E. Schooley, Board of Trustees, Metro Memorial Methodist Church, Shriner, and into the side orders, quote-unquote, of Masonry, are on the local level. There are so many Methodist Masons in England that they have their own lodges called Epworth Lodges. Pay attention, Britainers. He says, I'll say this again. There are so many Methodist Masons in England that they have their own lodges called Epworth Lodges. Named after John Wesley's birthplace, Epworth Rectory. The Moravians, a Gnostic sect who call themselves the Moravian Brothers of the Order of Religious Freemasons, played an important part in the founding of Methodism. Moravians played a decisive role in the origins of Methodism, which helps to explain the enthusiasm of both. True, John Wesley's group at Oxford already called the Euthasiasts and the Holy Club, quote-unquote, was active there before the Moravian Peter Bowler came upon the scene. Still, it was Bowler, whom Wesley met in Georgia and then again in London, whose glowing pietism had such an effect upon the father of Methodism. It was Bowler, and that's Boehler, who in 1738 helped Wesley turn his attention inward to discover a new wellspring of religious feeling. Hello. And it was Bowler who suggested establishing the Fetter Lane Society in London, which Wesley patterned after several Moravian meetings already in existence. John Wesley advocated universal redemption, which emphasized salvation as an option of man's free will rather than God's free grace.
Uh-oh. The Apostle Paul.
Until American independence, the Methodist ministers under Wesley's authority in America and England were considered a society whose members were scattered within the various Episcopal churches. The American colonies' independence caused Wesley in 1784 to send Reverend Thomas Coke, that's C-O-K-E, to organize the Methodists in their own congregations, into their own congregations. My. All this organization, all these denominations. Isn't it amazing how it turns out that they're all controlled? Jeez, I would have never guessed it. Well, years ago I would have never guessed it, but now I'm not surprised at all. See, I'm sure on the outside all these things look good. And maybe if you went there, it might be good until you started to recognize the Masonic agenda and the Masonic teaching. But in the beginning, or if you didn't know any better, you'd probably say, well, this is a regular church. I don't know about now with our education that we have now, but years ago we would have been tricked, perhaps. Let's take a quick break. And we'll listen to a quick song here from, this is called Michael.
I'm not afraid to die. danger. We're constantly up on that day.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Saxon's Creed radio show, brought to you by DavidJamesBoston.com, your source for the truth. Let me just say this, that rats infest like Jews infest. And it's very disgusting to me to think that these Jews are able to penetrate every single thing that they can penetrate, just like rats do. Rats and mice and everything. They brought those things with them. And it's not a pleasant thing. Rats and mice are not pleasant. And Jews are not pleasant. Rat-faced Jews. But you see, they have all day and all night. Like this fellow told me years ago, and I've mentioned this to you. He said, you know, we have to go to work and everything and do all these things, but the mice have all day and all night to figure out how to stay in your house. And, you know, I knew what he was talking about, and so did he. You know, it's true, though. It's a very, very horrible thing to be in the world, especially at this time. I wonder if you agree. So let's continue. United Methodists and Youth. In 1972, the United Methodist Church sponsored me to go with the Kansas East Youth Study Group. The tour was well planned and well executed. The group was part of the United Methodist Church's program to raise up church leaders. The group consisted of UM teenage leaders. I was an exception. I was a Baptist. I guess this is Fritz speaking. And he went and stayed with different types of people and to see what was going on inside these churches, including, of course, the Baptists and the Jehovah's Witnesses. So, the group consisted of UM teenage leaders, blah, 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 blah. I still have the papers and the items from the tour. The group met Methodist leaders, including the head of the United Methodist Church, Pentagon people, congressmen, UN people, and revolutionaries from Angola. While our group was decidedly anti-Vietnam War, it seemed that our group did not connect with the contradiction of the United Methodist Church and that it helped finance the communist revolutionaries we talked with. Can you imagine? See, that's called liberation theology, which I keep telling you we'll get to. I can only get to what I can when I can. I'll get to it, though. I am grateful to the United Methodist Church for the opportunity to experience the group. In the context of this book, it could be mentioned that the Jewish and, listen to this, it could be mentioned that the Jewish and Masonic undercurrents within the UM, United Methodist Church, were visible throughout that trip. Some of the concepts that were stressed were civil rights, globalism, and liberation theology. There it is. Which means supporting these communist revolutionaries, see? Those concepts all tie within the powers agenda to bring in the Jew world order. The liberation theology and revolution that the United Methodist Church finances will be discussed in the next chapter. The small conservative denominations. To the credit of the small conservative independent churches and denominations, many of these are not part of the one world religion. Well, that's nice to hear. But the power has still made serious inroads into most of them. What will the Jew World Order do with these denominations? They have three options. Subvert the leadership. If there is no hierarchy to subvert them, then subvert the people. If neither of those can be accomplished, then they will have to make an exception for these groups or eliminate them. Well, the Jehovah's Witnesses will, you know, do that gladly. We will examine briefly three small denominations that this author is familiar with that illustrate these three approaches. It should be noted that in prayerfully studying many religious bodies, this author hasn't found any that don't bear out the scriptures. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. See, that's taken out of context, you see, but whatever. Let's continue. What is presented is neither to build up nor tear down the reputation of any group. Reputations are often simply men's images of something, rather than the thing itself. But to plot the course of the one world religion as the Jew World Order wars to destroy the last pockets of resistance to the one world religion, the next few years will decide whether they overextend themselves like Napoleon in Russia, or if they take over Jerusalem figuratively, like the Babylonians and Romans did. Control the hierarchy. The Seventh-day Adventists have over 500,000 members in the United States. Started by a woman of... My uncle and aunt were Seventh-day Adventists. Listen. You listening? Now, listen to the last name of this woman, because just like the Nazi party fellow that was the previous ruler of the Nazi party in America, his name, I believe, was Colin White. Listen, the Seventh-day Adventists have over 500,000 members in the United States, started by a woman of Jewish heritage, Ellen Gold White. They have made the Sabbath a prominent part of their religion. This author has admired their church members for the standards that they have maintained, especially their stand against Freemasonry. This denomination has a hierarchy with a president. Every 5 years, the denomination has a convention to discuss a particular issue that is placed on the agenda. For instance, recently they discussed whether women could become ministers. The easiest way for the New World Order, Jew World Order, to deal with such denominations is to subvert the hierarchy. That the hierarchy can be moved in such directions can be seen by their decision years ago, even before Roe versus Wade, to allow abortions, which even their people help perform in their hospitals. Maybe this author is off base on this next observation, but to think of an Adventist doctor eating health food for lunch and then performing an abortion seems like a New Age value system. That is just one indication of a shift towards New Age morality. We see people like the Seventh-day Adventist writer Reen Norbergen co-authoring a book with psychic Jean Dixon. You remember her, right? With Reagan? Subvert the membership. Not all small denominations have a hierarchy. The Church of Christ are groups of independent churches. Although independent for many years, a few editors of Church of Christ periodicals and a clique of a few ministers were looked to for guidance. The trend within the churches of Christ seems to be one that churches are moving away from, looking for a few men for their direction. Because there's no powerful hierarchy to subvert, the Masons haven't shown a great deal of interest in recruiting its ministers. This denomination has historically put no barriers or deterrents up against Freemasonry. Masons have had free access to church positions if they wanted them. There are Church of Christ ministers who are Masons, and this author personally knows the various Church of Christ churches with lay members involved in Masonry. One Church of Christ in California meets in a Masonic hall. 33rd degree Freemason and Church of Christ minister, Forrest D. Haggard, who recently wrote Short Talk Bulletin, which is an attack on every Christian who criticizes the Lodge. Haggard says that critics of the Masonic Lodge can be divided into three categories. Somebody that has a personality problem. Two, political or religious dictatorships which oppose the free speech often attack the Lodge because it insists on such freedoms. And three, for money. Haggard even claims the Lodge is supportive of it, the church. These groups of churches are showing movement toward the one world religion. They're adopting the ideas that New Agers are planting within the churches, using New Age language and moving forward toward ecumenicalism. In Visiting the Church of Christ Ministers, this author, this author has experienced a lack of knowledge on their part as to what the New Age ideas are as compared to the biblical Christianity. By the way, there have been an attempt to bring these items that this author is bringing up in this book before Christians practicing them. Those that have been contacted by myself or others have stubbornly refused to listen. No, our people? And so it is hoped that by some chance, some of the many people contacted will read this book and see the bigger issues at stake. When a Church of Christ asks the United Methodist Church to have communion with it, the issues at stake are much larger than simply, do we like them or not? Churches like the Churches of Christ are easy targets for the many schemes of the New Order and what they've thought up to subvert the churches. They, in general, fell for the one where, in exchange for signing on a paper denying Christ as the head of the church has received a tax-exempt status. I'm going to stop right there as I ponder that. I want you to hear that again now. Let's go over that again. Churches like the Church of Christ are easy targets for the many schemes of the New Order and what they've thought up to subvert the churches. Now listen very careful, please. They in general, the Churches of Christ, fell for the one where in exchange for signing on a paper denying Christ as the head of the church has received a tax-exempt status. Now, I've never heard about that before. Can you imagine anybody, any head of any church that claims to be real, denying that Jesus Christ is the head of the church? Can you even begin to conceive what we just read and heard there? So in order to get tax-exempt status, they say, oh, yeah, we deny that Christ is the head of the church. See, that's Antichrist, right? I mean, of course, I'm pointing out the obvious here. And these people have no problem with that. Can you even begin to imagine? Wow. The top secret operations research technical manual that the Bilderbergers Policy Committee uses, which is discussed elsewhere, chapter 3.6, the devil's number again, or, 3 times 6 is 18 again, too, spells out one of their methods to subvert Christians. Because the Church of Christ doesn't take a stand against military service, this tactic has been and will be successful as one tool to subvert their members. Quoting, in this one part of this manual we read, quote, few efforts of human behavior modification are more remarkable or more effective than that of socio-military institutional known as the draft. A primary purpose of the draft or other such institution is to instill by intimidation in the young males of a society the uncritical conviction that the government is omnipotent. I like the way it's saying it both ways, omnipotent or omnipotent. He is soon taught that the prayer is slow to reverse what a bullet can do in an instant. Thus, a man trained in a religious environment for 18 years of his life can, by this instrument of government, be broken down, be purged of all his fantasies and delusions in a matter of mere months. One that conviction is instilled, once that conviction is instilled, all else becomes easy to instill. Even more interesting is the process by which a young man's parents, who purportedly loved him, can be induced to send him off to war to his death. Can you smell the devil and the Jew in that, or what? Remember what we read yesterday, and that socialism cannot survive without a force and without totalitarianism? You see, a primary purpose of a draft or other such institution is to instill by intimidation in the young males of a society the uncritical conviction that the government is omnipotent. Very interesting, isn't it? You see, our government, when I say that the federal government is a liability, it's a liability in every single way that there could be. It's anti-Christ. It's anti-white. It's anti-people. It's anti-good. It's anti-moral. It's anti-common sense. It's anti-love. And so many other things. It's worthless. And it's meant to be worthless. The manual goes on to say that part of the reason for drafting men is to corrupt them. Now, who do we know that wants to corrupt men? Who do we know that was spiritually born dead, spiritually dead from the womb? And wants to corrupt man and corrupt him utterly. Not corrupt human, but corrupt man. Now, just along the way, they don't mind corrupting human too. See, again, the manual goes on to say that part of the reason for drafting men is to corrupt them. Now listen to this. I just thought of this right off the top of my head. The draft dodger, Jefferson Clinton, see, he didn't need to go to the draft to be corrupted. He already was corrupted. I know you're laughing. Of course you're laughing. And that's the truth. See, now it makes sense. Now, if only Willie had thought of that, Slick Willie, if only he thought of that. But he would never say anything like that because he's too busy thinking of it all depends of what your definition of is. So let me read this again so we get this through our heads. The manual goes on to say that part of the reason for drafting men is to corrupt them. Why? It further serves to make the youth as guilty as the elders, thus making criticism of the elders by the youth less likely. Generational stabilizer is what it's known as. It is marketed and sold to the public under the label of patriotic equals national service. In other words, the Jew World Order realizes that if the young men of this country have moral superiority over their elders, they will stand up to them. When asked to do something amoral or immoral, by making them do things that they can be made to feel guilty for under the guise of defending their homeland, like fighting in Vietnam, they have eliminated moral opposition. I must say, that is remarkable. Did you just hear all that? So, geez, the government's an awful good entity, isn't it? They really, really want to help us, don't they? They want to protect us. They want to inject us. They want to kill us. They claim we're their enemy. They're very nice. I like the government, don't you? And if you're anti-government, that's horrible of you. I mean, because you're going against that such a good entity. that really cares about you and I. Oh, I know you're laughing. I know you are. But it really isn't funny. It's really quite despicable. So they have eliminated moral opposition by creating another generation of guilt-ridden young men. This highlights what you will learn in chapter 310, where the rubber meets the road, quote-unquote, where we discuss methods to cope in a Christ-like way with the Jew world order. If there is a lack of safeguards for the Church of Christ churches, that is not the situation with the next denomination we will discuss. I mean, I just am blown away with just how evil. Now, here's another thing that Fritz was with the Amish people for a while, too. So he wanted to see, he was trying to find out about all these different things. I mean, here's a fellow that actually really does the research. I mean, it doesn't get any deeper than that, than to get right involved in it, huh? I just cannot conceive. Do you realize how many of our people are in collusion with the devil, knowingly and unknowingly? You wonder why there's a remnant? And some of those that say they're a remnant are in collusion with the devil, which is even crazier. Elimination or special exempt status. Some groups, like the older order Amish, cannot be subverted by the New World Order, Jew World Order, because they are not part of the system, don't believe in serving in the military, and don't give much, if any, chance to outsiders to subvert them. Here we go now. Here we go. Yeah. When Hitler took power over three Amish settlements in Germany were eliminated. The members of these churches disappeared. Now, do you believe that? I don't. Because the Amish are independent church districts, many of which do work with other districts, it was a small victory for the government during Vietnam War when the Amish churches decided to work together and be represented by a steering committee. But although this sets a precedence that the government will try to further encourage, it is a minor gain at best. The Amish churches will never give their autonomy away to some committee. This means that even if the government got people in they liked on a steering committee, it would have only minimal influence. Dig the name of it, a steering committee, a drover who drives cattle and steers the steer. A steering committee. Can the membership be subverted? Although it rarely happens, it isn't impossible. One major subversion took place over 200 years ago when the Amish folk allowed folk magic to mix with their culture. When the Rosicrucian settlements fell apart, they joined the Mennonites in Lancaster, PA, and brought in many of their occult ideas. Other influences, too, have introduced occult practices. Although the famous Pennsylvania hex signs are more representative of a higher Pennsylvania Dutch churches, of the higher ones, they and the magic they represent also have been practiced among the Amish. Magic, astrology, and New Age healing have made solid inroads into the old order of Amish. The Amish book, which lists all their ministers, is mixed with pages of astrology and has been for decades. After writing an expose of astrology showing its Babylonian origin and its unscripturalness, this author sent the book to the publishers of the Amish calendar, their book listing their ministers, challenging them to leave the astrology out of the calendar. The challenge was ignored. Wow. The Amish have worked hard to remain a rural people. The farmers of this country are one of the true producers in the U.S. Most of us merely manipulate or move or rearrange what the farmer produces. The farmer depends on the weather, the soil, the sun, and water. But of course, he ultimately depends on the father. Right? Or hopefully he does. America has belittled and ignored the farmer too long. One weakness of today's society and the Jew world order is their total lack of appreciation for the farmer of America. Someday that disregard may come back to haunt them. The push today by the power is for... Let me stop before I even go on. Whether these stories are true or not, I don't know. But it says there's the suicide rate among farmers in America is way up right now. The world has a death wish, ladies and gentlemen. It certainly does. These people are willingly disobeying the Father. They're willfully ignorant. They're willingly calling for their own death. It is an amazing thing to me that the world is on a train wreck. It is a train wreck, and it wants to be wrecked. It wants to be killed. Our people, there's a lot of our people that want to be genocided. These wars, you know, this is definitely the wrestling of flesh and blood. And it's wrestling with spiritual entities as well. But it certainly is a wrestling of flesh and blood. Don't believe any Apostle Paul nonsense about we wrestle not against flesh and blood, because we wrestle against it all the time. What do you think a war is? This world is on a course for its own death. And all these people, it's like they all have the same death wish. I don't know if the devil has put this death wish spell on people, but they are trying to destroy themselves and everybody around them and everything possible. Can you imagine? You'd have to be under some kind of a spell to want to, you know, go against your will, go against what's common sense, go against the Father in heaven, go against nature, go against what's right, going, you know, it's insanity. And it just makes no sense. And yet it's going on by the majority. The world is under a spell, ladies and gentlemen. There's no doubt about it. And the rabbis have been putting this spell on our people for an awful long time. So, it continues. Someday that disregard may come back to haunt them. The push today by the power is for agribusiness and large Russian-type farms. It seems all the lessons learned in the communist countries will have to be rediscovered the hard way. Chapter 2.2. Capturing the Catholic Church. Learning how the Catholic Church was captured a very long time ago, Mr. Fritz, when it decided to mix the pagan priesthood with the Christian priesthood, so-called. That was the first mistake, and it was subverted a long time ago. The devil captured that church from its very beginning. Oh, yes, that church fought against the Jews here and there. But like everything, it was penetrated and destroyed. Because it didn't listen to Jesus Christ from the beginning, and it still doesn't. It's too busy looking at Mary. Learning how the Catholic Church is part of the New Age, this author first came across evidence that the Masons had infiltrated the Vatican from reading Catholic material, not anti-Catholic literature. Next came the discovery from Masonic sources that numerous Catholics down through the centuries have been Masons. Finally, it was discovered that the ex-Catholics had been disturbed by the contradictions of Masons being in the Catholic Church leadership. Although my specialty is not the study of the inner workings of Catholicism, and I may not have every single detail correct, there are too many legitimate sources that clearly indicate the fact that the Catholic Church will be a fundamental part of the Masonic New Age world religion. Not to accept this. Not only are their theological and religious tie-ins since Vatican II, but the Catholic Church is also has a number of economic and political connections to the one world power. Of course it does. Rothschild is their banker, right? Unbelievable. How this chapter's information is arranged. This chapter will give information on Jewish and Masonic illumination within the Catholic Church. A general overview of the history in regards to Catholic Church and the creation of a one world state. The specifics of the takeover of the Vatican by Freemasonry and its allies in modern times. The Catholic Church has far greater influence and involvement in world affairs than perhaps any other religious body. When covering such a broad survey of events, it becomes impossible to jump the reader through all the hoops of research this author has experienced without writing another book. My formulae will be to try to compress the story and provide the framework of documentation and sufficient references for the history given so that the reader may be introduced to what has transpired. Illuminated Master Joachim of Florus. The idea of Illuminism is an old one. One of the earliest Catholic scholars to adopt Illuminism was Joachim of Florus. Joachim of Florus in the 11th century, was heavily influenced by Jewish apocalyptic thought, and under the veil of being Christian, began a group of illuminated ones, quote unquote. That ought to speak volumes, folks. A number of the ideas that this illumined master Joachim of Florus held can be seen to have resurfaced with the certain Adventists, such as Charles Taze Russell, among others. Joachim of Florus believed a new race of spiritual or enlightened ones would take control of the world. This view is now echoed in hundreds of religious groups today. One of his ideas that of viewing the days of Revelation 12 as equaling the year was picked up on by Charles Taze Russell. Thomas Aquinas attacked that view in Summa Theologia, Part 3, Supplement, page 77, Art 1 and 2. The Illuminated Ones were very successful in various ways to discredit Christianity and establish their own agenda. They have worked quietly through the diverse groups. And it has taken centuries for the fulfillment of, quote unquote, the plan. It doesn't say quote there, but I know what the plan is. The great plan, right? Which various illumined ones shall call the divine plan, or also, like I said, the great plan. The advancement of the technology has greatly added to the fulfillment of the goals. Some of the greatest advancements in technology have come through illumined minds such as Thomas Edison, who was both Jewish and a Rosicrucian. Thomas Edison is Jewish and a Rosicrucian. And Nicholas Tesla, who were friends and co-workers. Edison's daily associate was the Freemason George E. Stringfellow. Everett W. Frazar was a Freemason who worked at Edison's lab. How a person is illumined. The illumined ones receive their illumination through various channels. Oh, man, it's unbelievable. Which correspond incidentally to the Hindi forms of salvation. Drugs, dances, channeling, rituals, and intuitive knowledge are methods to be enlightened or illumined. I'm going to read that again because that seems to be a very important thing to think about. Drugs, sex, and drugs, and rock and roll. Right. Now, in other words, drugs, which gives you feelings and intensifies feelings. Dances, which is all about feelings, right? Channeling, which of course is feelings, isn't it? Rituals, and intuitive knowledge are methods to be enlightened or illumined. These types of activities have characterized the mystery schools since ancient Egypt, ancient India, and ancient Babylon. Christianity would call illumination under many circumstances demon possession. Yes, yes, we would. Nikola Tesla was quite open that his achievements, and some have called him the greatest inventor, quote-unquote, ever, came from intuitive knowledge. Other scientists have also received their ideas from some outside source of illumination. The illumined ones stand in opposition to Christ. Let's stop right there. What does that tell us about the illumined ones? They're antichrist. The illumined ones stand in opposition to Christ and his teachings. Christ believed he was the truth and the light. He taught that no one could come to the Heavenly Father except through him. He's the way, the truth, and the life. But he's also the light. Illuminism teaches disobedience to our Creator God. I hope you're listening. Because it believes men can become gods. Who promised us we could become gods in the garden? Yes. This mysticism has worked to destroy all the normal aspects of authority and to glorify Lucifer. That it has done under many masks. If the Illuminati goals of destruction, Jewilluminati goals of destruction of family, nation, and Christianity, along with the establishment of a one-world government, which is to be democracy for the Jews, Jewish world dominion, if it were to be achieved, then the largest religious body, the Catholic Church, would have to be included. The capture of the Roman Catholic Church is one of their crowning achievements. Kabbalistic Jews. Well, really, that's where we'll stop there. We're on page 382, so we made some headway here. I must say, this really is incredible what we're learning here. And it's scary to think that there are this many subversive people in our world. Practically everybody you walk by or stand by. It was a really weird thing when I was in this hardware store and this fellow said to another fellow, "The force be with you." He was an older fellow. He looked like a Freemasonic type. And I said, "Well, you know who the force is, don't you?" I said, "It's the devil." He says, "Whatever that means." Imagine. See, I'm the type of fellow that will say something. I'm not like your ordinary people. I know that he didn't like it, and I knew he wouldn't. Amazing, isn't it? You see, that's your teaching from Hollywood. May the force be with you. What did I just say just a little while ago about a force? That socialism needs totalitarianism and a force or force, or else it will collapse. So may the force be with you. See, the demon Yoda said that to Luke Skywalker. And sometime I'll explain to you this, that the evil empire is really the Father's empire, because it's what they call heaven. The evil empire. And the force, this ragtag group of people that are trying to go against the empire, they're made up of all kinds of fruity type people and all kinds of animals and half breeds and everything. I think it'll make sense to you when you realize that the Star Wars, what it really is all about. It's not what you think. See, they want you to be for the underdog. The underdog, in other words, the dog, get it?
the dogs that are outside. They are all trying to make a plan to destroy the empire or the Father's heavenly establishment on earth and in heaven. And they want you to be for that. They wanted, this is what they do. They join queers, transvestites, niggers, half-breeds, anything you can think of, Jews. They're the ones that they get them all to join with them. All these different ragtag groups. And they're all going against the Father's heavenly establishment, the evil empire. So you have to realize when they're showing you the evil empire, they're going to make it look as bad as it can be. It's obviously not going to be really what the Father's empire is like or what his morality is like. They're just going to give you the negative view, the demonized view of the empire, like they did with Germany. Anyway, you've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and until next time, study to show thyself approved.